Hi, it's Bob from Royal Spa. Soaking in a hot tub full of Epsom salts is the absolute best way to minimize everyday aches and pains. And we know all about Epsom salts at Royal Spa. Royal Spa hot tubs are the only hot tubs on the market that can safely and effectively use Epsom salts. Made right here in Indiana, Royal Spa hot tubs are the highest quality hot tubs on the market. Visit any one of our three Indianapolis locations or visit royalspa.com.
Ah, Royal Spa.
So we're getting ready to talk about Caitlin Clark. We're getting ready to talk about the NBA playoffs. We're getting ready to talk to a guy that is tonight going to be on the call for the Chicago Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks. But we butter up Jimmy by playing a New York Yankees victory song.
Well, we do that because Ryan Rucco's past and current works include the Yes Network.
I'm aware.
He's a Yankees fan in his own right.
We talked about that last time he was on, right?
So a double dip. So it works both ways. Buttering up both me and Ryan, I think, there is the play.
So, Ryan, would you like to begin by talking for 5 seconds about the New York Yankees or about basketball? We'll give you dealer, not dealer's choice, card recipient's choice.
Hey, I'm just glad that, you know, you guys are so considerate of both your hosts and your guests when it comes to music selection.
Fair enough. Now, well, listen, Jimmy is a big Yankees fan, and I will say, Ryan, and I think you'll agree with this, there are certain franchises in sports that even if you aren't a fan, and even if you're like the antithesis of a fan of it, you go to one of their live events, and it's hard to not get a little, at the very least, a great appreciation for it, right? And the Yankees would be one of them for certain.
Yeah, no doubt. Those franchises exist. I always tell people, you know, Fenway Park is, outside of Yankee Stadium, it's my favorite stadium to go to. And, you know, obviously I grew up, you know, just absolutely loathing the Red Sox, but I just have such an appreciation for their history,
totally,
the feeling I get in that ballpark and for their fan base. So yes, I know exactly what you mean.
You know what's weird, and there's a reason that I'm going to bring it this way and then segue into the relative stuff from today or that we're going to talk about, but the Red Sox are a good example. There is a weird part of it, and I know that you can't say this with a Yankees affiliation, and Jimmy, you can't say it as a Yankees fan, but when you go to a Red Sox game at Fenway, or when you go to a Knicks game in the Garden, there are certain things like that where you almost, you get and you can appreciate from their fan base, and you're almost envious that you're not able to have that same experience game in and game out because of the history that is entrenched in those places. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. It totally makes sense. There is something about those kind of buildings that evoke something that's hard to pinpoint.
And the long lineage,
you did,
right?
A nice job. Yeah, you did a nice job of articulating it. You feel it when you're there, for
sure. You see some guy and you're like, man, that poor SOB like saw nothing but losing for 100 years and his grandpa was dreaming of seeing this. And, you know, and then you kind of have an appreciation for it. So I'm going to begin with this before we get to the fact that I know you're going to be on Bulls Hawks tonight. A lot of NBA to talk about. Big NBA news that just happened. But you also were part of the WNBA draft. And Rome was not built in a day. But to me, I look at women's basketball and the progress that it has made since the WNBA has come along, and it's been waiting for its ceiling-breaking moment. And it's not to say that it's going to happen overnight, but would you agree, Ryan, in what you have seen, that Caitlin Clark does appear to be the start of a momentum, and we'll see if it sustains, but the start of a momentum now where young girls and young fans and older fans of women's basketball now have something that, in fact, can be the ground floor of a long-standing fan, you know, fandom they can have with a star player?
I actually think one further. I think it's happened. I think what we've had is we've had incremental progress. We've had steady growth. That has become consistent over the last, it's been a, you know, 27, 28 year build, but it's been really noticeable over the last 5, 6, 7 years as the increases have happened, the interest has happened, and the inroads to just like more general, you know, sports cultural conversations has happened. And so the ground was so fertile to have the right star, then make it pop. And it was only going to with that right star, and Caitlin Clark is that star. And so, I mean, the numbers we're seeing, like, you're not seeing, oh, like, you know, this is a little growth. This is, you're seeing records get absolutely shattered, metrics be completely thrown on their head. We're not seeing, like, wow, this is growing. That's what we've been seeing. We've been seeing, wow, this is growing. What we're seeing right now is, oh my gosh, like, what is happening? This is like an earth-shaking seismic change. Kay Fagan wrote an amazing article about in 2021 that I would suggest people go back and read, that was so prescient, talking about kind of this moment coming, and when it did, how everybody was going to be like blown away, and kind of foretelling the right star coming along to light the match to what was being built. And that star is Caitlin Clark. And I think, you know, one of our researchers at ESPN in our ratings and analytics department tweeted out something just joking about how they're having to redo all their projections for May 14th and Caitlin's debut, because those draft numbers were just insane. And that's kind of what's happening. You know, we've been waiting for this moment. And one thing that I was talking to a former WNBA great who I think like kind of put it very interestingly, and she was saying, you know, you had your diehard fans, right? But you weren't able to capture the casual fans for a while. And part of the reason was because for whatever reason, people love to hate on the WNBA in the past. And they love to, you know, poke fun at women's basketball, which I always thought was, you know, in bad taste and inaccurate, but it was like part of kind of the cultural norms, right? And what they needed was it to become like culturally cool. And it has. We've all known it who have been in it, but now to the masses, it is cool. When these women walk in the room, they don't need to introduce themselves. Everybody knows. Angel Reese walks in the room, everybody knows it's her. Caitlin Clark walks in a room, everybody knows it's her, you know, and there are so many other players in this draft class who have that kind of impact, Camila Cardoso. And so I think the cool factor has happened. The casual fan is there, hence the explosion. And Caitlin is obviously the fulcrum of it.
Ryan Rucco is our guest, covers all things for ESPN. We'll hear him on the call tonight of Hawks at Bulls NBA play-in tournament, tipping at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. You, of course, heard him throughout the NCAA college basketball tournament on the women's side, and hear him as well as a mainstay on WNBA broadcasts. Going back to the Caitlin Clark conversation for a second, Ryan, I look at what she was able to do in the college game, and we had Lynn Dunn, general manager of the Fever, on yesterday, and she highlighted as well her ability to stretch the floor with those logo threes and her passing ability. And I look at the pairing of Aaliyah Boston, and I say, why can't that be gangbusters right out of the gate? How big will this adjustment be for her? And would it surprise you at all if there isn't really an adjustment period and she lights the world on fire out of the gate?
No, it wouldn't surprise me, because I think the league is going to have to adjust to her as much as she's going to have to adjust to the league, right? And at first, I think it might be more the league adjusting to her, because people have not had to guard the way they're going to have to with Caitlin. And, you know, she's going to make the right basketball play. If you're going to blitz her every time, the rest of her team's going to be playing 4-on-3. Remember, you know, we have not seen a player like this in the women's game before. Someone who shoots from distance the way she does, with regularity and accuracy, off the dribble, and, you know, from 30-plus feet. And so there's going to be an adjustment for her opponents as well. And now she's going to be playing with teammates who are much more capable of taking advantage of the attention that she gets, and also the passing that she seemingly, you know, her highlight passes every single game, and the way she's able to, her get ahead passes, the way she's able to get easy buckets in transition for her teammates who were not of the caliber of Aaliyah Boston, obviously, even though they were, you know, good in their own right. This is just a different stage, a different step. So, I mean, if I'm any front court player who's playing with Caitlin this year or in perpetuity, I am always going to make sure I am in the greatest shape of my life, because I am going to be running and I am going to have 10 easy points a game simply from her magical downcourt passing. And I and Aaliyah in the pick and roll game as well will be fantastic with Caitlin. And I don't think it'd be surprising at all if they're, you know, right away a team that's not just a playoff team, but squarely a playoff team.
Ryan, are you ready to listen to something that then later tonight when you're doing the game between the Bulls and the Hawks, you can say, this guy in Indianapolis said the dumbest thing on radio to me today. Are you ready? Here you go.
Yeah. No, I would love to. Yeah.
In this town, in basketball in general, but in this town, there is still a great reverence for the Indiana State-Michigan State Final Four in 79 for the obvious reasons with Larry Bird and Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
And that catapulted the two of them. That put them on the main stage, and that carried through their entire professional career. Do Caitlin Clark and Reese both need one another to be viable WNBA players sustaining at the level that they played in college because of the fact that both of them were introduced to the transcendent audience simultaneous and with one another, and that will continue through the WNBA?
I don't think they need one another, but I think it's good
for both of them. Could it be a Bird Magic good. Type thing, though? Could it be
yeah,
that, like, you know what I mean?
It could. I think, you know, with Bird and Magic, you had two MVPs, right? Like two all-time great players. And so I think it depends, you know, what kind of professional impact they are both going to have. I think, obviously, Caitlin is the much safer bet for a player who's going to be an MVP candidate in her career. But I think Angel is going to be a very good pro, and I like her fit in Chicago. I like her with Teaspoon as her head coach. And I do think that one of the things that Kathy Engelbert has talked about a lot is that the league, in order to continue to grow and take next steps, it needs rivalries. And that's something that she has tried to help foster and engender. But obviously, you know, it happens naturally with matchups. And there is a rivalry, even though Angel and Caitlin have a great personal relationship, there is a basketball rivalry between them, and one that definitely piques the interest of fans. So, yeah, when Indiana meets Chicago this year, when Indiana meets Chicago in the playoffs someday, if they are both, you know, performing like all-star caliber players or better, absolutely it's going to be great for them, and it's going to be great for the growth of the game. But I don't think that Caitlin is dependent upon any other opponent for the interest she's going to generate and drive when it comes to this league.
Ryan Rucco of ESPN joins us. You can catch him tonight again, Hawks at Bulls NBA play-in tournament, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Looking localized, but switching to the other basketball franchise in the Indiana Pacers, what were your impressions throughout the year? And we could even microcosm it to post-Pascal Siakam trade of this Pacers team, Ryan, and how do things shape up against Milwaukee in your eyes with Giannis Antetokounmpo potentially off the board for the first two games?
I mean, I think Indiana is just really fun to watch, guys. Like, I've felt it all year. The way Tyrese Haliburton plays the point, it's just so fun. And I remember having a conversation with Jenny Busek, who, of course, you know, member that Pacers coaching staff last year, about Tyrese, and she was telling me how much he and his intellect and the way he just genuinely gets joy from his teammates performing well reminds her of Sue Bird, who she coached in Seattle, and who Sue credits a lot for kind of the further development and evolution of her offensive intellect and an ability to break things down, especially from an X's and O's standpoint. And I think you see that joy from Tyrese when he plays the game, and I just love it. And yeah, giving him another legitimate running mate like Pascal Siakam is exciting. I think, you know, we all know, you guys know better than me, but I've certainly felt it covering games, whether it was the Fever in the finals back in 2015 or it's been the Pacers at moments since. Like, you know, this town gets into a great basketball team. They're thirsting for it. And so I'm excited for the Pacers to have a team that, you know, Pacers fans could be proud of. And I think the matchups, I think it's a good one. You just kind of have two different feelings going into this series organizationally, right? If you're the Pacers, you're thinking, hey, we're on the up and up. We have this transcendent young point guard. Here we are in the playoffs, you know, maybe a little ahead of schedule, maybe hitting what people were hoping and projecting this year. But either way, something you feel great about. with all the momentum going in the right direction. And for the Bucks, you know, this season has felt like a slog. Even when their record was better earlier in the year, nothing kind of felt like it was clicking. And so you're still waiting to see if it will. But without Giannis, it kind of feels like, yeah, well, you know, that's been the theme of the season, just not quite living up to what's possible. And you wonder if that narrative takes them over a little bit and slides them out early. I think the Pacers have a great chance to win this series.
Ryan Rucco, our guest, ESPN. Again, he'll be on the call for the Bulls and the Hawks in the NBA playoffs tonight. Ryan, outside of Boston, who's outstanding, obviously.
Yeah.
You kind of get the impression that the East is just throw them in a blender. Like that there's, and I agree with you about Milwaukee because of health, but otherwise, you know, it does feel like it's going to be uber competitive at every level outside of Boston.
I agree with that. And some of it then becomes matchup dependent as well, right? Because there are, you know, Hubie Brown used to always talk to me about that. Like once you get to the playoffs, it's about matchups. Because usually there's one team that, you know, a team looks at in the East and says, hey, we can beat, you know, six of these teams, but these two, or, you know, we could beat seven of these teams. So this one's a tough matchup. No, I don't think Boston really has a matchup that they'd be worried about. That's part of what bringing in Porzingis did for them. But to your point, you're right. The rest of the East, like if you're Philadelphia, the way you ended the season, getting Embiid back, the way Maxey's played, you know, you can obviously make a case they can beat anybody and that they could also give Boston a really tough series. If you're Miami, you know, all you need to do is look at your recent history to convince yourself. If you're the Knicks, you're like, well, you know what? We've actually played better basketball than anybody else in the East, but the Boston Celtics. And we have been otherworldly with OG Anunoby and Jalen Brunson on the floor together, regardless of whether or not Julius Randle's there. And then the Pacers, the way they're playing, the talent they have, the cohesion they have, the fact that they have a point guard who makes everybody better, and they're playing an injured Milwaukee team, the Bucks would look and say, hey, if we can get healthy, look out. I think there's a lot of cases to be made. You know, the Cavs have sputtered at the end of the year, but they had a stretch where they, you know, they look like one of the best teams in the NBA for a month. So I do think you can kind of convince yourself of any team going to the conference finals to beat Boston. It's hard to convince yourself of anybody beating Boston, but it's not hard to devise a plan where someone else from the East ends up there in the conference finals.
Ryan, quickly, in 30 seconds or less, what's one thing to watch for tonight? Bulls, Hawks, do we finally see a 10 seed win a game?
You know what? I think the thing to watch for is Trae Young and DeMar DeRozan down the stretch of a game. It's interesting because of the stakes. These teams play tight games all year. Bulls have been one of the best clutch teams in the NBA. DeRozan, the best clutch player, and Young has a history of being clutch. So I think that's really the draw.
It'll be a better matchup than what we saw last night between the Kings and the Warriors, right? Which was a good game. It was a fun game to watch, but it was a lopsided game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot tighter than that.
Ryan, we appreciate it, man. Great stuff, and appreciate having you on.
You got it, guys. You're going to love watching Caitlin there and looking forward to getting Indies for some games.
Thanks, appreciate Ryan. Ryan Rucco, of course, as we mentioned, 36 of the Fever's 40 games will be nationally televised, so there will be plenty of opportunity for him to be able to watch and probably be on the call for those games as well. Jimmy, I'm telling you, our next guest who just completed his ninth regular season in the NBA, his fifth with Indiana, it's like an art. It's an art to watch penetrate the basketball, find an open lane along the baseline. If there's a layup, you take it. If not, you go along the baseline. You circle, then back up, top of the key. You facilitate, find an open shooter. If they're not there, you go right to the rack. You lay it in. And then you wait and you steal the inbound pass.
Picasso, Monet, McConnell.
It's totally true, right?
Yep.
TJ McConnell, who has mastered that move in the NBA and now has added more to the arsenal, joins us on the program. TJ, happy playoff season. How are you?
I'm doing well, my friend. How are you? Thanks for having me.
You know, man, it's the best time of year, right? I mean, and playoff season is upon us. The weather's broken. Life is good. And you've been a big part of that. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show, because you're a veteran. This is not new to you in terms of, you know, having to do different things over the course of the season. But Take me through the last, let's say, 2 months in just in terms of your elevation of play. Maybe you don't feel it. Maybe you think, like, I'm doing the same thing I've always done. But it does seem as though you have found a groove or rhythm. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, a little bit. Obviously, there's been an uptick in scoring for me. But I just have my teammates and coaching staff to, you know, thank for kind of empowering me, tell me that's what we need is for me to be aggressive and look for my shot when it's open and kind of just get in the lane and create a problem. And if my shot's there, take it and, you know, shoot open threes and get people the ball. That's really how I just looked at it.
TJ, can you take us through the journey this season, going from an unknown of where minutes might come from you on opening night to, you know, I think wrongfully not being in the conversation for sixth man of the year by season's end, what that journey was like for you and to handle it as well as you did, to the point that the second unit is expanding leads versus giving them up?
Yeah, I mean, I think just kind of just staying ready. It's an 82-game season. And it's a long season. You know, things can happen. And if you continue to be who you are as a person and not waver, you know, be a positive light in the locker room, which I tried to do. I thought I did a good job of that. And just control what you control every day. And that's the attitude you bring and the energy you bring to practice and, you know, the controllables. That's really what I focused on. And just staying ready because I knew my number could be called at any moment.
You know, speaking of your number, TJ McConnell, the thing to me that I'm most impressed by, I think, quite frankly, you know, like Pascal Siakam's a good example. He comes to the team middle of the year. I know that, you know, everybody liked Buddy Hield. And so here's this trade. And I'm genuinely curious. So I'm sitting there just before the game when you guys, and I know that he came to you guys on the road, but without missing a beat, you had the same introductory handshake dance with him, and you have a unique one for every single player on the roster that knows when they see you during the handshakes in the pregame that they do a particular, like almost like a patty cake thing with you. Who orchestrates those? How long does it take? And like, how did that all come about? Because it's, to me, extremely impressive.
Yeah, honestly, it doesn't take that long. It's not rocket science, so I'm not.
It is for me.
You know, you're making me sound really smart, so I appreciate it. But no, I mean, it's just we've got a great group here, who are great teammates, great players, and great people. And you know, with the handshakes, just bring out your personality, and that's really, you know, what it came down to. Just everyone showing their personality and having a good time with it and getting ready for the game.
You know, when I see that, though, and part of it's age and year of tenureship, TJ, admittedly, I'm not trying to make you feel old. I've already made you feel smart. But I look at that and I go, that makes that guy a glue guy. Like whether, and I think you know this, but that's the kind of thing that if there are two guys on that roster, maybe there are two guys that they don't, you know, they come from different backgrounds, whatever, but they have that same thing in common in the fact that they go through the same ritual and have fun with it. Everybody has fun with that, right? How critical is that? And when did you know that when you weren't on the floor, that was kind of a role that you had to undertake?
Yeah, I mean, even if I was playing, if I wasn't playing, you know, I've always said to myself, remain who you are. And you know, I think guys need that. It's something to, you know, have before the game. And just because I'm not playing, I'm not going to stop being a positive light on the team. And I kind of said to myself, this is bigger than you. And just to continue to be who you are and have fun with it. And that's what I did.
Pacers guard TJ McConnell, nice enough to take some time with us. TJ, oftentimes in sports, the line between narrative and fact gets blurred. As a player that has playoff experience, two trips to the playoffs in Philadelphia and one with the Pacers a couple of years back, how much does that matter? Is that an overstated narrative, or is it actually highly beneficial to already have previous playoff experience? And for those that don't, which is a majority of this Pacers roster, how do you ingrain to them how different that level of competition is?
I mean, I feel like if you're a great player, whether you're a rookie or you're 10 years in, you can play. I mean, you can play. And whether that's regular season or playoff basketball, and it is more difficult. I will say that. I mean, there, you know, it slows down. You have to. It's a chess game, and you have to be able to read and react quicker, and just be way more locked in. And I feel like for guys that haven't seen it, it'll be a, you know, an adjustment at first, but the great players get adjusted very quick.
TJ, we from the outside, TJ McConnell of the Pacers is our guest here on Quarry & Company. We from the outside look at the Pacers, and obviously, and you know this, I mean, Tyrese Haliburton is, you know, the all-star. Siakam is obviously a wonderful player and has now acclimated. Can you tell me from your eye, you're in the practices, you're on, you know, you're on the buses to the arena, on the road, etc. Can you tell me a player that from the outside we would be surprised to know how much the player has evolved or meshed and been an important part of the cohesiveness of this roster?
I obviously, you named two of the great players, but Andrew Nembhard to me and Aaron Nesmith, those two guys I don't think get talked about enough. Andrew Nembhard started off the year as the backup. Then he's the backup two, the starting one. Aaron Nesmith is guarding, you know, the other team's best player, shooting threes. And I mean, and he's picking up full court. These guys, we would not be where we are today without both of those guys. And those guys, from the beginning of the year to where they are now, have made tremendous strides.
You know what I like about those two? And I want you to tell me if this is a fair assessment. I like guys, TJ, that when you look at the box score, might have a night where they give you 12 or 14 points. But those are points that weren't necessarily part of the main orchestration of that offensive set. But when the ball came to them and the shot clock was running down, they knew exactly what to do. Or they know when it's kind of go time and when it's feed and facilitate time. And those two guys, to me, appear to be, and I'm not on the roster, right? But they seem from the outside to be guys that are not worried about whether they get 14 or whether they get two. They're worried about what the number is on the left-hand side of the column, win or loss at the end of the day.
100%. Those two especially make the right play every time. And it's, you know, whether it's sacrificing a shot for a better shot. But the thing that it can't be overstated is.
Now, somebody rang the bell. Does that mean somebody just hit like a bunch of 3-point shots?
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what that means.
heck yeah.
But those two on the defensive end, you know, I can't say this enough. What they bring to the table on that end of the floor takes us to the next level. I mean, they really play really hard and are such good defenders.
TJ, on Sunday, you made the most three-pointers that you've made in over a year, and you also took the most three-pointers that you've taken in well over 15 months. This might be a, if it ain't broke, don't fix it answer, because your mid-range game is so poetic that, you know, it's effective enough to, again, be a part of six-man conversations towards the end of the season. But can we expect a green light from you now from beyond the arc? Is that where we're going after a 3-for-4 against the Hawks?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this year, you know, kind of what my role was in the beginning of the year, I got to a slow start confidence-wise, especially from three. So, you know, I wasn't really looking to shoot it from out there. But once I got consistent minutes and was able to, you know, kind of find my groove from out there. And, like, I'm not going to be a high-volume guy that takes 6 or 7 of them. But, I mean, if I'm open, I'm going to shoot it from out there. And, you know, I just have Jenny Busick to thank, who has kind of stayed with me throughout her time here and has continued to work with me. And, you know, I call her my therapist. You know, she talks to me through tough shooting slumps, tough times, and she's been here every step of the way.
TJ, with you guys as a group, you know, the defense has obviously come together more so than it was at the beginning of the year. And it felt to me like there was a time where when you guys were really starting to kind of learn defensively how to clamp down, that it was coming at the cost of your offensive fluidity. And maybe having Siakam as a new face in that was a factor as well. But it seems to me like in the last month, you guys have kind of figured out how to play at one end defensively but still have the energy and the pace of on the offensive end. Is it a difficult balance to find?
I mean, absolutely. I think at the beginning of the year, our offense was so elite that, you know, the defense was kind of being overlooked. But that doesn't mean we weren't working on it. I think, you know, Jenny and Coach Boylan do a great job with our defense. And obviously we got off to a slow start, but they continue to stay with us, and we locked in. And we look, we realize that, you know, we might have a great offense, but if we don't lock into the defensive principles and pay attention on that end, you know, the playoffs aren't going to be an option. You can't get into the playoffs and just be a great offensive team. You got to have a great defense too. So credit to those two coaches and us for kind of, you know, righting the ship and getting that fixed.
Pacers guard TJ McConnell is our guest. TJ, as you have continued to mesh and grow with Obi Toppin, how impactful has this been on this Pacers offense?
He's unbelievable. He's so easy to play with. He gets out and runs better than anyone I've ever seen, and creates mismatches where we can throw it over the top or get a lob. And if you leave him open, he can really shoot it. So as a point guard, he's so easy to play with and makes my job really easy.
How much do you get a chance, TJ McConnell, in the basketball season? I know you guys are playing. Do you get a chance to keep up with and follow or watch your alma mater, Arizona? Did you watch them much this year?
I try to as much as I can. You know, sometimes their games are on pretty late in the West Coast, but you know, I check scores for sure and keep up with them for sure. Yeah,
because the reason I ask, you know, Indiana just got a transfer from Arizona, Balo, their 7-foot center. Didn't know if you could give us any scouting report on what Indiana's getting.
I mean, he's a great big man. I've talked to him a few times. Great guy, great teammate, and he's skilled. So I think they're getting a really good player. And sad to see him leave Arizona, but you know, wish him nothing but the best at Indiana. You're getting a great guy, great teammate, and great player.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, and I'm not going to ask you to speak specifically on this situation. That would be, I'm not going to put you at that risk. But I'm sure you know that today you have an NBA colleague in Jontay Porter that was leveled a lifetime suspension for gambling, what appears to, you know, an investigation that they determined was an impropriety of gambling within the NBA. In terms of those, I guess, rules and regulations, how much has that, like, gone over with you guys? I mean, do you have to take a class on it? Does the league come in, or is it just kind of a common sense thing?
Yeah, honestly, I mean, I haven't paid too much attention to that situation. Obviously, kind of a sticky situation, but, you know, I think we're given the gambling rules each year, and so obviously unfortunate, but I'm not too up to date with that one.
What is, in this particular week, TJ, as you get set, kind of a dead week, right? I mean, and that sounds ridiculous because there's obviously a lot of work to do, but is it tough when you're going from playing games, you know, back to backs and everything else, and then all of a sudden you've got this week to prepare, or do you almost get to a point where you're like, let's just play at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're all excited to play, but you know, we've got to lock into the details and tendencies with guys. Even though we've played this team 5 times this year, we've got to look at what we can get better at on both ends.
TJ, we've talked a lot over the years about rivalries within the NBA. And when you zoom in on the Pacers, it's Pacers-Knicks, it's Pacers-Heat. And it was well documented, the, you know, blows that were shared on both sides of Pacers-Bucks this season. Are we trending that way, where this is the next great rivalry the Pacers will be a part of?
Do you not see it that way? I mean, I think the way I look at it is it's two great teams playing against each other. You know, we're not making it about anything else. You know, we're excited for the opportunity to play in the playoffs again against a championship caliber team in Milwaukee. And we have to be locked in because they're a great team.
How much, TJ, in a playoff series, this is kind of a weird way to ask this, how many different teams do you have? And what I mean by that is, do you go into it and just say, we are the Indiana Pacers, this is how we play, and you're going to have to beat us 4 times? Or do you go into it with kind of a flexibility of different styles of that chess match that you were talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to continue to play to our strengths and to our identity. And, you know, we have to make adjustments. I think that's what playoff basketball is all about.
you mentioned earlier how much the game slows down in the postseason. With the pace at which you guys like to play, how do you avoid becoming the victims of pace being dictated? How do you dictate that pace?
I think that's on us. You know, we control our pace and tempo. Obviously, they're going to do some things, but we've got to read and react too. And we've got to get the ball out and do what we do best and run.
TJ, lastly, I'm sure you're aware, you know, this morning, obviously, the introductory press conference for Caitlin Clark with the Indiana Fever. Pacers Sports and Entertainment has the Pacers and the Fever. It's pretty exciting, isn't it? I mean, just for young girls in the state of Indiana and basketball fans in general, just your overall thoughts on Caitlin Clark joining the organization.
I mean, her impact for not only women's basketball, but basketball in general, like you stated, I mean, it's undeniable. She's transcendent, and we are incredibly happy to have her here and looking forward to her and, you know, the rest of the Fever on having a great year. And obviously she'll have a long career in the WNBA, and we're all looking forward to watching her and the Fever play this year. We're happy to have her.
Are you standing near the bell right now, by the way? For those that don't know, the practice facility at the Pacers, there's a bell that is rung when somebody, if they're like a three-point benchmark is hit. Are you near the bell by chance?
I am not.
Darn it. I was going to see if you could ring the bell for us on the way out. I thought that'd be fun.
If you want me to, I'll run over there.
Yeah, yeah. Can we get you to run over there and ring the bell? That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Get your exercise here. Now, are you doing this while you're still on the phone?
I just ran here. You ready?
Okay, yeah, here we go. TJ McConnell. Yes! Yes! We love it.
Simple
things.
That's
for all the threes that were hit down the stretch, TJ, and we look forward to watching the Pacers and the Bucks in the playoffs, and best of luck. You got a city behind you guys here for the playoff push for the Pacers, and appreciate the time today.
Great. Thanks for having me, and you guys have a good one.
All right, appreciate it. TJ McConnell of the Indiana Pacers, ringing that bell, baby.
Pacers-Bucks gets underway here in just a couple of days, still sorting through play-in tournament action with Sixers-Heat, Bulls-Hawks still to take place a little bit later tonight, but the Pacers avoided that altogether by clinching a spot into the NBA playoffs, and will start their seven-game series this weekend against the Milwaukee Bucks. He'll be following along and covering it as he's done all season. You can follow him on Twitter at Alex Golden NBA. He is our next guest, of course, the aforementioned Alex Golden. Alex, tell me this from a coverage standpoint, how relaxing or relieving, maybe is the better word, has it been last night and then going into tonight to know that guaranteed Pacers basketball for at least four games is at stake this weekend versus having to go through the rigors of the play-in tournament?
Oh, it is such a relief. I was dreading having to sit there and try to come up with stuff for the next couple of weeks if they happen to not make it out of the in season. The play-in tournament. I was going to say in season. That's bad at that. But yeah, it's a relief, and it's a great opponent for them to play too. I think it's a lot of fun. A lot of narratives there to talk about. So for a podcaster like myself, it is plenty of content to discuss.
Alex, how are things in the car wash?
Does it sound terrible over here?
It's gotten better, but when you first went there, it sounded like you were in a windstorm, or as Jake mentioned, over at Crew.
Well, I do need to get a car wash. I am not driving in a car wash. It's probably just these AirPods. I can take them out if it'd be easier.
Can you give us a rundown? Are you driving right now? I mean, I want safety first, hands 10 and 2, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm hands-free right now on AirPods.
How are the road conditions? Everything okay outside? Is it dry outside?
It's dry outside. It's been kind of up and down all day today. Can't make its mind up if it wants to rain or be hot. But right now we've got plenty of sunshine and no rain. So it's been nice right now.
Well, the weather's indicative of the way the Pacers season has gone at times. There are times where you wondered if they have figured out how to beat the teams they're supposed to beat. They win a lot of games. Obviously, the in-season tournament comes to mind that captivated people. Seems to me, Alex, like they have found meteorological consistency here the last 6 weeks. Are you confident that they now have kind of figured out those things and that they will be able to find the consistency that's eluded them in the postseason?
Yeah, I actually do. I think that this team has figured out who they are. I think the rotation's a little bit more simplified. I know the Mathurin injury really does hurt things, but I think it's allowed them to be a little bit better defensively and given them, you know, opportunities for guys like TJ McConnell, Obi Toppin to step up and be more scorers than they had been in previous you know, segments of the season. So with everything that's played out how it has, I think, you know, Tyrese is getting better. Pascal is getting more familiar with how this team wants to play. So I think this team's in a really good spot, and the consistency over the last, you know, handful of weeks, it just makes you feel like, okay, this team is hitting the right stride at the right time.
Alex, they were the best bench unit in the entire NBA this past season. Is what that group did, led, of course, by TJ McConnell down the stretch, is what that group did in the regular season sustainable for the type of often rotation crunches and the way things slow down in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think that's a great question because, you know, there's going to be players that play 40, 45 minutes a game. So I don't necessarily think that it's going to have as big of an impact, but I do think the Pacers can't get away from what got them here, and I think that's been their bench. Now, I do think if they want to maybe shorten it a little bit and go to a four-man rotation versus a five-man rotation off the bench, that would make a little bit more sense to me. But other than that, I think that they have to continue to allow TJ McConnell to do what he does best, Obi Toppin to play and get those minutes he's done well with. And then Ben Shepherd, I think you're going to really need him. It's crazy to say, but the rookie Ben Shepherd is going to play a huge part, I think, with this Pacers team because he's their third best perimeter defender. And if you get in foul trouble early on, who's a guy you can trust and throw out there? I think he's got to be the first choice off the bench. So I don't think they need to get away from their bench, but I think they need to not rely so much on it. And if the starters from the Milwaukee Bucks are playing a little bit more, don't be so hesitant to go back to your starters early, because I think if you go back and watch that Cavs game, the bench did a good job getting the Pacers back into it in the third quarter. But in the fourth quarter, they got a little tired. And I thought Coach Carlisle could have went to his starters a little bit sooner than he did.
Alex, is there a danger in dwelling too much on what happened in the regular season between these two?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I think that it does matter. I know people say it doesn't matter, it's a new series, but I do think it matters because it gave this Pacers team confidence. And I think that them having confidence that they can go in there in Milwaukee and win a game or two games or whatever they need to win, it makes you feel like there's a level of confidence that this team has in winning this series where maybe in prior series before you wouldn't feel that way. So I think that you can kind of look at it a little bit, but you can't put all your money into it since there's been a lot of changes with both rosters and coaching staff since they last played in January. So, you know, it's important to hang your hat on what you did well, but, you know that they have changed too. And I think that if you could just find that right balance and just play your basketball and not try to, you know, counter too much, just play your game and make them adjust to you, I think that's the goal here for the Pacers.
Alex Golden of Setting the Pace. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Nice enough to take some time with us. Alex, this is examining a positive and a negative impact, and I want your thoughts on which is greater of the two from both positivity and negativity. On the negative side, the Bucks having uncertainty of when Giannis will be available in this series in one corner, and in the other corner, the Pacers' midseason acquisition of Pascal Siakam. It's a positive versus a negative. Which one would you say in its totality is more impactful?
That's a good question. I still think it's got to be, you know, the fact that Giannis could not play in this series. As much as Pascal Siakam, I think, is going to be great in this series, just not having Giannis for a game or two could really, you know, flip the script in terms of what exactly happens. I think there's a reason why a lot of people are picking Indiana to, you know, be upset here in a 6-3 and a 7-game series, and a lot of it has to do with the uncertainty of Giannis. But the Bucks also haven't been playing that great either since Doc Rivers took over, just 17-19 in the last 36 games. So I think that Giannis being out, though, like that Bucks team, even Austin Rivers, you know, Doc Rivers' son was on ESPN basically saying, yeah, they have no shot against the Pacers without Giannis. And so I just feel like if that's the case, then, you know, the Pacers have to just take advantage of that. But they can't overlook it. And that's the one thing that I hope they don't do is take, you know, Giannis being out for granted and kind of feel like, okay, we've got this in the bag. They can't have, that kind of mindset. They have to be fully locked in, fully focused, and they cannot lose track of what's at hand here. It's like, you got to beat this team, especially if Giannis doesn't play. You've got to pummel them and make them pay for not having that guy, because I don't think that they are talented enough to be able to win a series without Giannis, no matter who they throw out there. They might win a game without Giannis, but I don't think they can win a series, especially against this Pacers team.
Alex Golden is our guest. We're talking about the Pacers and the Bucks in the NBA playoffs. By the way, the schedule has been announced now for those that are curious. And the games that Had not yet been out. They'd only announced game one, I think, to a point, right? Earlier today?
Yeah, they had put out that game one would be Sunday, but they didn't even have a time schedule for it. So now we know the time will be 7 o'clock on Sunday, which is probably good news for Pacer fans, since we'll have all of Sunday to enjoy before the evening when they get to watch the game. And then Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday are the rest of the first four games. And they have a weird tip-off on Friday at 5:30.
Yeah, Friday 5:30. That's the 26th of April. So a week from this. Is that a week from this Friday? I'm trying to think here.
You are correct.
From this Friday, yeah.
I know I'm going to be out of town. That's why I'm like my head's all scrambled here. Friday and then Sunday, 7 o'clock. Then game six, if necessary, will be on Thursday, May the 2nd, between the Pacers and the Bucks. I want to go back to two guys, Alex, that have played really well for them. We had TJ McConnell on just about an hour ago, and it does seem like he has found kind of this different level, and a lot of that sparked perhaps by his outside shooting. But are McConnell and then as well Obi Toppin, who appeared in every game in the regular season, are those guys going to log the same postseason minutes that they did in the regular season?
That's a good question too, Jake. I think that if McConnell's playing well and Obi Toppin's playing well, then I think they should. I don't think you should kind of shorten their minutes just because I know you're wanting to play that rotation a little bit shorter, knowing that you have starters that could play longer minutes. And I know Rick Carlisle talked about this, just the length of timeouts in the postseason allows guys to get more of a break. So that's why you see players play more of an extended amount of time than they normally do in the regular season, plus not all the wear and tear, back-to-backs, that kind of thing. But I think if Obi Toppin's playing well and McConnell's playing well, you got to ride that hot hand. I think they've been so impactful for this Pacers team this season that cutting their minutes, if they're playing well, doesn't make sense to me. So I think that you'll probably see some different combinations out there. You're going to have foul trouble that's going to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see quite a bit of Siakam and Toppin together, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see more McConnell and Halliburton together than maybe we had seen in the regular season.
Alex, at this stage, Alex Golden of Setting the Pace, nice enough to take some time with us. Alex, at this stage, is it safe to say that Tyrese Halliburton has broken out of that slump, that bad stretch, whatever you want to call it, that plagued him in February into early March? And where would you point to as where that corner was finally turned in your mind?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say that it's fully turned. I think it's turned for the most part. I think it's probably going to be as good as it gets since the injury. He still doesn't look as springy as he did before the injury. So that is one thing that I'm just, you know, from what I've seen with the way he plants and things like that, the shot just has not been there. The step back three that he once was, you know, so good at has just not been as impactful. So I don't necessarily know if I think he's turned it completely. He's had some nice games here and there. The game against Toronto, I thought he had a really nice offensive performance. Didn't have the number of assists that he's, you know, accustomed to having, but, you know, really had a good shooting game there. So I'm hoping he can build off some of that stuff. The Hawks game, obviously, everybody shot the ball well in that game. I don't think the Hawks played any defense. So it was, you know, just a great opportunity for everybody to kind of get going in that one. But, yeah, I'm not 100% sold that Tyrese is 100% back yet. I think he's probably close to like 95-ish% back. But I'm hoping this week off, not playing any games, will really give him a little bit of extra rest. And we saw what a little bit of extra rest could do during the All-Star break. I know he played in that All-Star game and was like traveling around like crazy, but not playing a lot of games. We saw that he was able to come out and really torch the Pistons in that first opening game. So maybe with more rest and no back-to-backs, I think that he could be as healthy as he's going to be. But they're going to need him to be really good because he was phenomenal in the five games they played in the regular season, averaging around 27 points a game. So don't know if he's going to get to that point, but hopefully he can get close to that.
Alex, you think Ben Shepherd stays in rotation as much as he's been?
I think he has to. I've had people ask me that question, but I know he's a rookie, and maybe if the spotlight gets too big for him while the game's going on, maybe Rick will have to call an audible. But I think that they trust him, and I think he's been too impactful defensively to take him out of the rotation, because he's probably their third best perimeter defender out of everybody else on this team. And I would rather live with him getting that experience and trying to figure things out than throwing the other options they have out there on the bench to defend, because I just don't think there's anybody that's able to do it like he's able to do it. Especially, you know, Nesmith is a guy that everybody's excited about what Nesmith can do and how he can kind of be like an X factor. But we know Nesmith can also get in foul trouble early on. So I think that you're going to need some insurance there if Nesmith does pick up some quick fouls, just playing a little bit too over-aggressive. And I think Ben Shepherd could fit in nicely with that, you know, backup spot for Aaron Nesmith.
Alex, is there a level of simplicity to these first two games, assuming that that is the range that Giannis misses? If he's out for games one and two, is there a level of simplicity to the Bucks to say, as long as you don't let Damian Lillard go off for 45 or have another vintage playoff Dame-like performance, these are winnable games?
Yeah, I mean, to a certain degree. I think that everyone's going to be focusing so much on Damian Lillard if Giannis doesn't play, and I understand why. Damian Lillard, like, he's going to have to be really good for them to have a chance to win, right? So that makes a ton of sense.
And he's done it before, right? Like, that he's done it in Portland. You've seen it happen.
Right. I think Indiana really just, and I think Woj brought this up, I think it's a great point, you know, the Pacers playing so fast is not the style Dame likes to play. He likes to play a slower-paced half-court game, and if Indiana can speed him up, I don't think he's going to be able to hang with them in terms of that style of play. And then making him work on defense is going to be huge too. But everybody is talking about, you know, Damian Lillard, and then Bobby Portis has been playing pretty well since Giannis went out, and he's filled in for him. I think he had a 30-point game not too long ago against the Magic last week. So, you know, Bobby Portis is capable of going off, especially in Milwaukee. But I know Chris Middleton's had a really down year. I know he's been injury-prone all season long. But don't count out Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton is someone that has carried that Bucks team multiple times, even when Giannis is struggling. And I think he's going to be really the deciding factor for Milwaukee if they're able to win a game without Giannis. I think that Chris Middleton's going to be that guy that can really put the hurting on Indiana from his outside scoring and just being there before. And, you know, just he's had his way in a lot of different playoff series, just being able to get off tough shots and make them when they count the most. So I think Chris Middleton's kind of the guy you have to watch out for. But for the Pacers, like, simplicity, it's just go out there, do what you do best, and you have to attack their bigs. I think Miles and Siakam have to attack Portis and Lopez and really win that front court matchup. If not, I think it's going to be problematic for the Pacers.
You know, maybe the Pacers will catch a break and Damian Lillard will come into Gamebridge and think it's still the All-Star game and start chucking them up from half court.
Yeah, I know, right? That would be something else, wouldn't it? I mean, he had a pretty good showing here, though, so that's the only bad thing. Maybe he gets hot again from the
low. Well, that's true. He did hit a couple of them, right? I mean, I guess that's why he ended up with the MVP trophy. Alex Golden is our guest, talking about Pacers Bucks. Alex, I want to go back to Ben Shepherd. I have always felt that rookies in any sport, sometimes the biggest testament to them is when you kind of don't notice they're out there. I know that's weird to say when there's only five guys in basketball, but more and more when Shepherd has been out on the floor, he's done a really good job of kind of seemingly offensively in particular letting the game slow down for him a little bit. Have you observed that?
Yeah, I think every game you watch Ben Shepherd, and that's a great point, you don't realize that he's out there all the time. It's just, and that's the good thing, because he's not making those rookie mistakes. He takes the open shots when they're there, but he doesn't really force a lot. And I think that's one thing I've enjoyed about it. Obviously, you would love to see that shot go down a little bit more than it has, but he had some big shots. I think he hit a big one in Toronto, if I'm not mistaken, in front of the bench. So, you know, he's just one of those players that he just does the right thing and lets the game come to him instead of trying to force things and try to work his way into the rotation. It's just, if I play defense and I go out there and take open shots, that's what's going to reward me more playing time. And I've really enjoyed seeing him grow as a player. I think that he is going to be a part of this rotation for a very long time. And the energy, the way that he just comes in with, you know, so much, you know, he's so fun. That's a big thing about him, is like, he's just having fun when he's out there playing, but he plays hard, does the right thing. It's really hard to kind of find a rookie that can do that right away and be that impactful, especially when his number wasn't called early on. He just put his head down, and when it was his time to be called up into the rotation, he answered. And I think Rick Carlisle rewarded that because he's seen how good he's played. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think Ben Shepherd has been really special for his rookie season, kind of being the 26th overall pick. Nobody really knew what to think of him. He's really earned that spot. I think he's deserving to keep it.
Alex Golden is our guest, covers the Pacers for Setting the Pace. You can listen to that by searching Setting the Pace wherever you get your podcast. Alex, going to another rookie, and this question kind of answered itself for me over the weekend and over the stretch run, really, but with Jairus Walker basically only being a garbage time piece over the last couple of weeks, do you envision that pretty much being his conclusion to his rookie season, meaning that any postseason opportunities for him, barring injury, are likely in garbage time?
Yeah, I think it looks that way going into a series right now. I don't think they want to throw Jairus to the wolves out there and kind of get, you know, the backlash if he doesn't play well, because he's still pretty raw, still trying to figure things out. But I will say this. If the Pacers find themselves in a bind and they need to make an adjustment, I think Jairus Walker could be that guy that they throw into the rotation to be that kind of adjustment, that counter that teams might not think that they would throw out there. That's the only playing card I think I can really see with him getting into the rotation. But yeah, it's going to be tough for him to crack the rotation, especially if the team's playing well and they're winning. You know, foul trouble could you know, help that cause, but I think that the Pacers probably would end up going smaller with Nesmith at the four over playing Jairus, you know, extended minutes. I think that probably at this point, Doug McDermott would get the nod over him. So he's probably that 11th, 12th man still right now in the rotation. But honestly, I do think that if they needed to kind of throw a Hail Mary out there, he could be that kind of wild card player for them just because he's got size, ball handling, can defend. You know, why not try it if things aren't working?
Alex, if this is something that I missed, my apologies, because I'm thinking it probably is. Have you started selling merch or anything like that since you cover the Pacers that just says blue and golden?
No, we haven't done it. I haven't done any of that yet. We just released some new Setting the Pace t-shirts, though, that came out last week.
How about blueandgolden.com? Was that taken?
No, I still have it. I haven't been writing for a hot minute. It's been a busy time for me.
Okay, I was going to say, because it's like too perfect, right? Like you got to, I would think, you know, selling shirts at the arena. I got all kinds of visions and plans here on what we can do with this. You know, I mean, after all, I did trademark Why Not Indiana. So, you know, I mean,
yeah,
the brain's always going, Alex. This is what happens when you're neurotic and an insomniac, you come up with all these thoughts, right?
Is it legal for me to sell shirts in the field house?
Well, that's what I mean. You got to partner up with them. But sure, I mean, you give them a slice. I'm sure okay. You're good, right?
If you're not partnered with the field house, Alex, you're going to have to be five streets down. You're the guy that's yelling at people. Hey,
how about the guy that sells concert t-shirts on your way out for like $10 and then you wash it one time? You watch it one time and people are like, when did you go see Motley CR? You're like, well, you know, it's I washed the shirt. Please forgive me. Okay, Alex, lastly, I want to ask you this in terms of the Giannis side of it. Let's get back to that in conclusion here. We know that Giannis is listed as, and the Bucks have talked about the fact that they do not anticipate him, quote, like early in the playoffs. If this goes seven, if this goes six, you know, what's the number in terms of from the Milwaukee side of what the expectation is of number of games that strained calf could hurt Giannis and keep him out?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think for me personally, like I think the expectation is, you know, he'll be back for game two. They'll test it, especially if they lose game one. I think there's more of a chance he plays in game two. If they steal game one from Indiana without Giannis, I think they might rest him in game two, bring him back Friday if he's healthy. For some reason, if Indiana, you know, splits with Milwaukee in the games one and two. Now, if Indiana's down 2-0, do they rest him again in game three? I think they kind of just play it out based on how the series is going. I don't necessarily think that's going to work in their favor. I don't think Indiana loses two games to Milwaukee without Giannis. I mean, stranger things have happened, but I would be kind of shocked if that were the case. I think they need Giannis to win. I mean, Giannis averaged, what, 43 points a game against the Pacers in five games this year, and they only won once. So I think that they're going to need every bit of Giannis playing in this series to have a legitimate shot. So I'm anticipating that he'll at least play in game two if he doesn't play in game one, and it could just be a little bit of, you know, gamesmanship by saying, oh, he's probably going to be out this first game. Then all of a sudden, 6 o'clock rolls around, and here he is, healthy, able to play in game one. That wouldn't shock me either. So, you know, I just think Giannis is the key for Milwaukee. If they don't have their best player, this has not been a good Milwaukee Bucks team this year. You know, they've been okay. But I think that they have been so dependent upon what Giannis does that it's going to be hard for them to have any playoff success if he's not there.
You know, it feels to me, and I'm going to reference this just for people that can go this far back, it feels to me like the year that Reggie Miller had the eye injury and they still got into the playoffs, but people were coming off of those highs of the great teams they'd had, and they knew that Reggie was hurt, and it's like, you know what, we'll kind of just get through this playoff run, see what happens, and then come back and push all in for another run. And I guess I'm optimistic that that maybe is where Milwaukee is, where it's like, you know, it just hasn't been our year, it hadn't worked. So let's kind of go through the motions and then we'll see what happens. You know, it feels like they're ripe for the picking, but it is obviously a team with some great players, so we shall see what happens. Alex, tell us where people can continue to see and hear your coverage for the Pacers.
Yeah, no, and I agree with everything you said there about Giannis. Great comparison to Reggie Miller with those with that series that they lost. But yeah, you guys can find me at Alex Golden NBA on Twitter, Instagram, podcast, wherever you get your podcast, just type in Setting the Pace. We're on YouTube as well. So if you guys want to check out some content, we just did a playoff mailbag that fans had questions. We answered them, and we'll have a preview coming out tomorrow, and then I'll have a national guest coming on Friday just to kind of cover the series from a national perspective instead of a Pacers perspective. So try to get a different look there. But yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on, and I know I had to reschedule from yesterday, so I appreciate the flexibility, and always enjoy talking to you guys.
Always appreciate it, Alex. We'll talk to you soon. All right.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys. All right,
Alex Golden. I believe actually yesterday, wasn't it Nathaniel Atticus Finch that called him and woke him up at 2 in the afternoon?
2 days ago.
Erroneously. And was like, oh, yeah, ago. My bad.
Yes. Yep.